Welcome back to Runners Connect. I appreciate you coming back and to watch this episode. We're really excited today to have on our show Trent Briney. For those of you who don't know, Trent has a marathon PR of 2:12:34, which he ran at the 2004 Olympic Trials in Birmingham, Alabama, and where he came in fourth place. And today he's going to share his story with us about how he went from a 2:20 marathoner to 2:12 marathoner in basically one race. In how we dealt with coming in fourth place, which at the Olympic Trials, which if you don't know, is one spot away from making the Olympic team, and then how he went on to overcome some pretty difficult injuries and continue his running career and continue to have success beyond that race in both shorter distance and longer distances, and recently winning the Colfax Marathon just a couple, maybe about a month or two ago. So he has a lot of wisdom to share. He's been running for a long time, and we're really excited to have him on. Let's welcome Trent. Hi, Trent.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks very much for having me.
No, we're really excited. You're obviously you're a famous athlete in running circles, and I'm excited to share your story and a lot of the lessons that you've learned with our audience.
Yeah, hopefully we got some more stories to come still.
Great. I like it. So what we want to cover in this interview for everybody is, you know, how we want to understand how Trent and how the lessons that he learned can help you deal with the ups and downs of your running career, of coming back from bad races or coming back from injuries. We want to talk to Trent about how he came back from a difficult Achilles injury that he needed surgery on, and then also, you know, how to overcome difficult mental hurdles when you're trying to make a big jump in training, for example, dropping 8 minutes in your marathon PR in one race. So to get us started, Trent, I want to kind of go back a few years and talk about, you know, how you got started in the sport of running in terms of making the progression to being the elite runner that you are. If I remember correctly, you weren't a highly recruited high school athlete. You weren't a stud. You know, talk about, you know, how you transitioned from going from high school to college, and you had a lot of success in college. So talk about kind of that transition mentally.
I think it's really funny. I was talking about this morning with the guy I ran with, who's a high school coach here out in Colorado at Broomfield High School.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually writing an article for Running Times or Runner's World this week.
So, oh, cool.
Pretty cool. But we were talking, and, you know, it's interesting what makes a successful athlete, you know, and how we judge these things. I mean, when I ran in high school, you know, I did it basically because my parents were getting a divorce. And I happened to go into the counseling office, because that's what you do, I guess, sometimes when your parents get a divorce. And so, you know, the high school counselor, or the middle school counselor, was like, let me know that he's a, you know, cross-country coach, I should come out and try it, you know. And at this point, we had just moved to Colorado. And so that's kind of what got me into it. And so I started doing that. And, you know, it was a great outlet to have friends and, you know, really to build some confidence, I guess, in something that I involved in. So each year through high school, it just kind of built upon itself. And being surrounded by great coaches, I had two great coaches in high school that, you know, were just, they would drop the right words at the right time. They would talk about the guy that's training harder, or, you know, just challenge you a little bit, you know,
right,
to see if you could be more. So that was really a lot of high school. You know, I didn't really excel until my senior year.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up, I think, sixth at state cross country. I ran 10:20 at altitude, of like 5,000 feet of altitude, and 4:48 for the mile.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not outstanding times, not something that should turn into somebody competing, you know, for 10 or 12 years after high school.
Right. There's a lot of kids with high school PRs that are faster than that, who stopped running or didn't take it to that next level. You know, did you have the self-belief in yourself at that point that you knew that you could be a great runner, or was it, you know, how did you approach that going, you know, running in college?
You know, I think I just had learned that the last year of high school, I had heard about guys from other teams training in the summer, and they were running 70-mile weeks, and, you know, I was just trying to run every day to stay in shape in the summer, and I wasn't even doing that, so fitter. So I didn't really know that, you know, I could go to college and run, and I figured, yeah, I'd go to college and study and get my degree, but I wasn't planning on running.
Okay.
That last year, you know, my coach knew somebody who he used to train train for marathons with.
Okay.
Who was starting a brand new team.
Okay.
It was a brand new team, and I jumped at the chance. I thought, wow, what an opportunity. I could be an NCAA athlete.
Right.
And to me, that meant the world. I mean, that was, you know, March Madness. That was everything. So,
yeah, that's pretty awesome. It seems like it went well, kind of fell into your lap in the sense that, you know, just looking at your times, it wasn't like you were probably recruited by any school. So it kind of worked out well. And then in looking at your college career, you were a multi-time, you ended up being a multi-time All-American by your senior year. Did you win the 10K at Nationals your senior year?
I lost by a half a second.
Okay.
To an Olympian.
Okay.
Who was also in the NCAA. His name was Michael Aish. And, you know, it was a great race. I gave it everything I had. And
I mean,
that's how we want to do is compete to our best. Ideally, we want to win, but
right.
When you compete to your best, you'll take second.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, and especially coming from where you were in high school, I mean, I can't imagine you ever thought when you were a freshman that, you know, by your senior year, you'd be running with Michael Aish, who was, for people that don't know, is an Olympian for New Zealand, I think in 2000 and 2004. I believe he was two-time Olympian.
I think so.
So, yeah, I bet you it was kind of a surprise for you in terms of making that amount of progress in 4 years.
Yeah. I think it definitely goes to just show, like, you know, we're all just athletes, you know. It's not, you know, your credentials necessarily. It's...
Mm-hmm.
Play hard, go hard, and just don't stop believing in yourself, you know?
Yeah. So did you, during that process, you know, in college and even after college, we can kind of work into that, you know, did you ever have the doubt about, you know, kind of making that next step in terms of, you know, like when you were kind of maybe middle of your college career, like did you have doubts that you could take that next step to compete with guys like Michael Aish? Mm-hmm. And then when you graduated, you went on to run professionally. Did you have hesitations about that step, thinking, like, maybe I can't do it?
I guess to state it the best, you know, if I look back at college and you know, I started as this wimpy guy in college who I didn't even sweat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My maturity hadn't gotten there. My body wasn't ready.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't grown muscles too much by freshman year. I wasn't running 70 miles a week.
Mm-hmm.
So... You know, each year I got connected with a really great coach, Graham Badger,
mm-hmm.
during college at University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. And, you know, he comes from a swimming background, but a lot of the principles are very similar
mm-hmm.
in endurance swimming and in running. You know,
right.
You need a high volume of work.
Mm-hmm.
You can do two-a-day workouts. You can get in the weight room. So he just taught me what can I do to be better.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of ate it up for a couple of years. You know, I was excited to get some scholarship money.
Right.
You know, I got $500 when I started, and by the time I ended, I was getting $2,000 or $3,000, you know, which
yeah.
isn't a lot, but my
it's time. Nice.
you know, it was just, I so valued the opportunity where, you know, there were other athletes not valuing the opportunity. They weren't training twice a day. They were, you know, living the more college life.
Mm-hmm.
And going to a party or two or three or more.
Right.
And I was being awakened to, you know, the ability mentally and physically that I could make myself better,
mm-hmm.
you know, that, connecting with my coach and learning about my sport. So that's really what propelled me from, you know, an average high school runner to competing by my senior year with somebody who's an Olympian and
yeah.
giving him the victory right away, you know,
right.
Just because he's got faster times. You know, I started thinking like Rocky, you know, why not? You know?
Right, right.
So that kind of led to senior year, and I had competed against some great teams from Adams State and Western State College,
mm-hmm.
who dominate Division II all the time. And I was starting to get up in their front two or three guys at a lot of races. So I knew I was getting better, and I was doing workouts that you'd finish and you'd say, yeah, I'm going to be pretty tough to beat here.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get stronger. And so by senior year, I had connected to Kevin and Keith Hansen with the Hansen's Brooks Distance Project.
Yep.
At that time, they weren't connected to Brooks, but soon to come.
Right, and, right.
I had a friend who's in the program who, at a recruiting meeting that they were having, he mentioned my name
mm-hmm.
because I had popped up on that national scene.
Right.
At Race versus Michael.
Yep.
That they had noticed me and they allowed me to come out for a visit. And, I wasn't sure. I kind of thought, my parents want me to get a job. I have this with Pepsi. I can work there the rest of my life.
Uh-huh.
And I thought about it and I was like, I could see my next 20 or 30 years
mm-hmm.
Happening. And for some odd reason at that point, being, 20 or 21 years old, I didn't want to go down a path that I knew where it went,
mm-hmm.
So, it took me a month or two to decide to go ahead and go out for that visit. And after I'd gone out, that urge to try to get better
mm-hmm.
to a higher level of competitive team where I had guys pushing me daily in and out.
Right.
And as you know from being on the team, that can be cutthroat and that can be and both of those can be good for you. So that's kind of what propelled me to look into post-collegiate running.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to stay in Colorado Springs, do a lot of stuff by myself. And at that point, I felt like I didn't have anybody to run with me when I was running my fastest.
Okay.
Push me when I was at my fastest. And that's something I thought I needed. How do I get better after I've already gotten so much better,
mm-hmm. you know?
So I wanted to surround myself with guys that no matter what day it was, there was always somebody still as good or better, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely that's what you get when you're in a program as talented and deep as the Hansons. There's always somebody ready to go.
And I forget the second part of your question. It was kind of as you transitioned into post-collegiate.
Yeah, so I kind of wanted to, I guess you actually did a great job transitioning that because that was kind of the question I had. And then kind of moving forward, when you went to the Hansons, did you immediately move to the marathon? How did that transition in training go?
I really liked that part of the story. I mean, I'd gone from running, 34-minute 10Ks as a freshman in college to running 29:13 twice mm-hmm. in college. 29 flat was USA's, where, 24 of the best American runners get into USA's. And
right.
All of a sudden, I've been addicted to trying to be an All-American, trying to be a national champion. And now this new goal was there of trying to make USA's. So, my intent going out there was, let's run the 10K. Let's get 15 more seconds faster in the 10K.
Mm-hmm.
And I expected that to happen right away. So for 2 years, I bought into the program and I fought really hard to try to be a 10K specialist
mm-hmm.
and get that next 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Just never happened. And, I think there's a lot of reasons for that. Sometimes when you make a big jump in training, you don't always get it in the races.
Right, right.
Some people would say that's overtraining, but eventually your body will adapt
mm-hmm.
Or if you give it rest. And so it adapted, but it adapted after those 2 years. And
mm-hmm.
those 2 years, the pressure was kind of mounting to show some performance at the better level than I had already done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd run some cross country races and I wasn't getting any better.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting solid, but not better really.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. How was your mentality during that process? Like, I know it can be, I work with a lot of athletes who go through the same process where they're putting in a lot of work, and especially when they start working with a new coach or with a new, they get serious about it, and then they work their butts off for 6 months, and then they don't get better, and you're kind of like, I'm training harder, I'm doing everything better, And did you struggle with that, or were you pretty good about kind of understanding that philosophy? Or
I think being in a team environment, I had some guys like Jeff Campbell who were, we used to call him Grandpa on the team. And, some guys that have been there, done that,
mm-hmm.
that were around. And that's a huge benefit of that team environment is, you're dead tired. You're coming home. All you can do is, basically sit on the couch and barely get to your bed.
Mm-hmm.
And, just to sit on that couch with somebody who's been there and done that and can tell you that it's okay and that you're doing the right thing, or can tell you just take it easy tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you're being pushed by your coaches and being pushed by your teammates, sometimes holding back for a day is a risk that you might want to take.
Right.
You know, they might not agree with that at the time, but sometimes you got to get your legs back, and I like to call it juju back, you know. You got to have some vibe. You got to feel it a little bit. I mean, so maybe not hitting that 140 mark in mileage that week, mm-hmm. you know, saying, you know what, I hit 127, that's enough.
Yeah.
And knowing that you held back one day, you know, setting high goals and then knowing that you're getting close to those things anyway.
Yeah. So, well, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there when you, so keep going with your story in terms of, you know, you had those 2 years of really not breaking through like you wanted to or you thought you could. And then, you know, kind of how did your training transition after that?
By the end of those 2 years, you know, Kevin and Keith Hansen, I believe it was about 2 years. So it was the fall of 2003,
mm-hmm.
and I joined in the fall of 2001. By the end of those 2 years, you know, I hadn't progressed there, and the Olympic trials were coming up in 2004. And, you know, the whole idea with programs is to give young kids and athletes the opportunity to try to be Olympians, to really compete at the best level out there, you know, whether it be the U.S. championships or Olympic or world championships. So they thought my best shot was to move up to the marathon.
Mm-hmm.
10K wasn't progressing,
mm-hmm.
you know. And being an athlete, I didn't want to quit on that goal.
Right.
So I kind of pit. I was pretty much like, yeah, I don't agree with you guys, but I don't want to leave the team either. I mean, they basically said, you know, if you want to stay on the team, we're going to train for the marathon.
Okay. And so you were forced into it a little bit.
Yeah, they were right. And, you know, my grumpiness, I think they did that in about probably in May.
Okay.
2003.
Okay.
And so pretty much all that summer, I was just pissed off. And I'd train 2 or 3 times a day
mm-hmm.
of running, plus weightlifting twice a week or 3 times a week. You know, and I was just pissed. I was like, if I'm not going to get any better at the 10K, I'm just going to train until I can train no more. You know, that worked for about a month. I was doing stuff and I was just like, oh, somebody's going for a run. I'm going.
Yeah.
You know? And it really worked and it was exciting and it was probably what allowed the next part to come,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, you know, after a month of doing that, I was kind of tired of running 3 times a day.
I can imagine.
A new challenge.
Right.
And we had started to get into race season in August.
Mm-hmm.
And August and September, we were getting ready for the Chicago Marathon. And there was like, I don't remember if there was like 4 or 6 of us running. And
okay.
we were new. And the goal was just to make the Olympic trials. And at that time, the standard was 2 hours and 22 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just went out to Chicago that year, and, you know, we had a great training group for a couple of months, you know,
mm-hmm.
for a week doing our long run together, doing 2 workouts a week out at Stony Creek or on the Pink Creek Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the workouts were going good, and you know, but I was still tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran 2:21:10. And at, I guess, 20 or 22 miles, I was running with 2 other teammates, and I looked down at my watch and I said, well, we're slowing. We either got to go or we won't make this.
Uh-huh.
I think 2 of us made it and 1 of us didn't, and we all lived in the same house. So, you know, it's a harsh experience. You know, they're happy for you and you're sad for them, and this lifetime goal of making the Olympic trials, you know, which is awesome because that's this week.
Right, yes.
I don't know, so that'll be fun to watch. But that was how I got into Chicago Marathon and marathoning. And, you know, I finished and I was really excited. And, you know, I pumped my fist because I was just like, yeah, see, I can do this, you know. Fighting back to tell those guys from middle school that they should have picked me first, you know.
I like that.
Competitive, even if I didn't have the skills of throwing the ball the best or you know, catching or passing the football,
right.
you know, that I can use my competitiveness as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's an awesome attitude to have about it. So I guess kind of moving next, kind of probably the big part of your story that everybody asked about or asks about, you know, so you ran 2:21 at Chicago, somewhere in that range?
Yep.
And then, so you know, I've already said it. So just maybe a few months later, or maybe half a year later, came the Olympic trials, and you ended up running 2:12:34, which I think a lot of our audiences would be interested in that approach to how you approach that training segment, how you approach that race to make such a big jump, especially when you're coming off, you know, not really having success for the 10K in the last couple of years. You know, I work with a lot of runners who are, you know, maybe trying to qualify for Boston, and they got to take that last 10 minutes off. You know, how did you make that jump in training? Did your training look different? And then I think more importantly, mentally, how did you have the confidence to say, I know I can run 2:12, even though, you know, your best marathon was 2:21, your best 10K was 29:14 at the time, which I think 29:14 is almost 2:12 marathon pace. Or it's just slightly under.
Near there, yeah.
So just talk a little bit about that process that you went through, you know, training for the race and then kind of on race day, you know, making that big jump.
I mean, I always get the question, you know, what happened? You mm-hmm. know, where did this come from? Like, all of a sudden you're fourth and you came out of nowhere. You know, I mean, it was those 2 years, you know, of building volume at Hanson's and building intensity,
mm-hmm.
And doing two-a-days, which I call density of workouts,
mm-hmm.
Volume, intensity, and density. It's kind of a principle Joe Vigil uses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing that, you know, through my college career at the end, increasing those factors. And then once I got to Hanson's, I was bought into how it works. And Kevin and Keith are great about, you know, they're setting you up competitively for races.
Mm-hmm.
They're studying the field, and it was exciting, you know. It's like those were things I was doing with my teammate in college, and
mm-hmm.
now my coach is sitting there saying, hey, look at this guy, this is what he just ran.
Mm-hmm.
So a little sidetracked there, but everybody asks what caused it to come out, and I think it was a couple factors. It was the years of training.
Mm-hmm.
It was that summer doing 140 miles a week and 3 times a day and going a little overboard and being tired at Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and running just under the standard, maybe a little tired, and then resting after that race.
Mm-hmm.
I think it took a week or 10 days down,
mm-hmm.
and then we started doing some cross-country training.
Yep.
So we've been doing marathon training all summer. So we had 3 months of base,
mm-hmm.
so back into a speed phase for a little bit and work on, you know, powering through mud and dirt
mm-hmm.
in Michigan, you know, as it got into wintertime. You know, I think was good because it helped our rhythm stay around.
Mm-hmm.
And most people think, oh, you just got to be strong to run a good marathon. But I think fast is also important. You know, you got to
yeah.
be really efficient. And so I think that was really good. You know, we did that through November through the fall cross country championships. So, and we did that off of 6 or 8 weeks of training. And then we had about 6 weeks of marathon training. So we touched up our speed and then
mm-hmm.
we went into... you know, 6 weeks of the marathon training we've been doing in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, since I had rested, I could run faster. It was easier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were just coming more naturally. I wasn't, you know, dead tired all the time.
Right.
I wasn't pushing mileage. I was just trying to get in the right zone, you know, 110, 130. I didn't have to hit a 140.
Right.
It was more important to feel good and to be hitting the paces. You know, the goal was to run 2:15 to 2:18 going into the race.
Okay.
And the fast guys were going to run, I think, 2:11 to 2:14.
Okay.
And I was training with the slower group of the two.
Okay.
And, you know, and it was good because I wasn't every single workout on my deathbed after the workout.
Mm-hmm.
I was at 92% instead of 98. And it allowed me to recover overnight and get stronger from workout to workout. And, you know, I think by the end of December, I was running well enough that, actually it was first or second week in January.
Mm-hmm.
I ran a marathon and I ran 105 and I felt really relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to Kevin and Keith the whole time.
Okay.
Do you want me to speed up yet? Do you want me to speed up yet? So, and that was like, oh crap, what's going on? Like, I should not feel this good running this pace.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the thing that kind of said, hey, take off some of the barriers in your mind and just allow yourself to run. And you know, you got some things going here that don't set that high-end limit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I So I had changed it based off of that race in January. Run 2:12, 2:15, knowing that 2:12 probably wasn't reasonable,
mm-hmm.
knowing that I should be in that range, 2:12 to 2:15, if I have a good day.
Mm-hmm.
I always want to plan for a good day.
Right.
You know? Especially for an Olympic trials, you know, I guess my mindset going into the race is kind of the next question, but, you know, so that's kind of how I transitioned out of Chicago, out of 2.5 years of training, into a performance that was better.
Yeah.
You know, and I was dating somebody that was making me very excited just life, so I was very happy. And most runners, you know, maybe they won't talk about that in an interview, but, I mean, you got to be happy to really be, I'm not too much into runner chi. you know, the energy that flows out of you is better. And, you know, so I would just say to people, make sure you're not sad with how hard you're training and the things you're giving up. Like, you still have to be happy. Otherwise, that really spectacular thing isn't going to come out of you. You know, and so I was dating this young lady, and she was a psychologist. And I actually had started working with a sports psychologist. And that part of the process really helped me, I think, because the sports psychologist challenged me in some ways mentally, that it was like, you know, I'd do my two runs a day, I'd go lift, and then I had this mental training as well.
Okay.
So it was another workout. And, you know, basically she helped me take the bars off of my mind,
mm-hmm.
not set limits as much. And she really got me focused. You know, a lot of coaches necessarily, they forget about it after high school. You know, your high school coach might trick you into thinking positive,
mm-hmm.
state meet. But, you know, the Olympians out there, I mean, they're doing some mental training as well, and you can get some real strength from it. And
yeah.
The thing she helped me with was, anytime a negative's in your head, flip it, you know? And, I mean, it sounds so simple, but when you're actually out on a 70-minute run, you have a lot of negative thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And training hard. And so every day in practice, I was working on this. And then I'd go see her the next week. And so, you know, just being happy, working with the psychologist to focus my mentality on allowing great to happen and getting about negative.
Yeah. No, I think that those are two awesome nuggets of information and wisdom. You know, being happy in training and okay with the sacrifices that you're making. Because it doesn't matter if you're at the elite level or if you're trying to run a 4-hour marathon, there's sacrifices that you have to make. You know, like for our audience, you know, maybe you're a mother and you have to give up a little bit of your, you know, alone time, or, you know, maybe kind of seeing your kids off in the morning to be able to get in your run. And you have to be happy with those sacrifices. Otherwise, you're right, it just kind of gets you down and you're always negative. Can you give us an example of some of the mental training exercises that the sports psychologist was asking you to do? How did you, because I think you're 100% right, like you always have to turn those negatives into positives. Even like during races, you're always going to have a bad spot where you're just like, oh, I'm hurting way more than I should. And you know, what were the mental exercises that she gave you to help get over, you know, kind of get over that?
So a couple things. One is, some of our mentalities as runners, especially, we get very stuck mentally and we can't let go of a thought, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the psychological world. I don't know the actual term for it, but it's the opposite of, I don't know if it's ADHD. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But like, you get stuck on thoughts, and basically, you know, she showed me the science behind getting stuck on it. And so, you know, we tried, like some medicine, and we tried that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you could connect the synapses, like, they were connecting without disengaging. So that was supposed to help make it, like, instead of keep firing, it was
mm-hmm.
supposed to, like, not, it's supposed to make it stick so that it doesn't have to keep firing.
Okay.
You just get stuck and you need to go on to the next thought.
I see. I kind of see what you're saying.
It was half personal, you know, stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting stronger as a person, and
right.
half this athletic person. So it was working both angles, and, you know, it was challenging my mind. I'd already been challenging the other pieces. You know, sometimes, I guess, when you're in a training group, you struggle with, you know, just different mentalities clash.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, we were training together. We always
right.
pretty good. But, you know, sometimes I didn't jive with maybe a certain teammate or this or that. And, you know, that can bring you down if you're
mm-hmm.
focused on that. And if that thought pattern is just firing and not disconnecting. You know, you need it to stick and then move on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
So sticking, replacing it with a positive, and then moving forward rather than let this thing just keep eating away at your mentality. You know, and
yeah.
it's hard. Not everybody has an example of that.
Right.
So, you know, not all of us, you know, but a lot of us have had struggles or you know, people that, you know, make challenging during training.
Mm-hmm.
People that picked you, you know, and, you know, I had to forget about that. I had to push that out and focus on let's move forward. Let's be positive. You know, so it was kind of, you know, forget Jeff. Can I do better? You
right.
know? So she was retraining my thoughts to like really take the power over my thoughts
mm-hmm.
back. Like, don't give it to all these outside forces. Give it to me. You know?
Right.
And, you know, on race day, it paid off. I mean,
yeah.
that and all the training and just everything was flowing together at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people say the stars were aligned.
Right. But it's not. There was no secret. It was, you know, you had 2.5 years of amazingly quality, you know, amazing quality training. You were putting in the work and, you know, you let your body rest and adapt. And then you attacked it mentally. You didn't just sit back and say, well, I hope I run well. You know, at this race, you went in and you saw a weakness in yourself, you know, from the mental side of things. How can I break down these barriers? And you went out and attacked it. So I think it's just a great example of, you know, that kind of the running quote from Once a Runner, you know, there's no secrets in training. And there's no secret behind how you improve so much and how you did it that race. I think just an awesome story. That was great that you shared.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. So then kind of moving on, you know, so you ran 2:12:34, obviously a great performance. You got fourth place. Like I said, for those who don't know, that's just one spot out of making the Olympic team. And then kind of after that, things, you know, kind of went downhill a little bit, from what I remember, cause that's when we kind of actually met each other a little bit. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but obviously you were an alternate, but all three of the team members decided to go. And then you were selected to run the World Championships in Helsinki in 2005. But you had an Achilles injury that prevented you from running that race. Talk about, you know, kind of, that must have been a disappointing, a pretty tough year, you know, to go from almost making it to not, and then kind of get your hopes up again to run to make your first world team and to run for the U.S. And then, you know, you get, I mean, that's like injury at the most inopportune times. I know for our audience that probably happens to a lot of people, you know, kind of talk about how you manage that mentally, physically, what were your emotions through that?
So let's see. Yeah, I mean, you know, over time we all get injured, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would have a nagging Achilles for me
mm-hmm.
or a nagging hamstring, you know, and all we can do is our best. And, you know, you don't always see the right doctors and such. Thankfully, I had, you know, some great chiropractors up there with the Ormsbys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, connections with doctors thanks to the team, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes you just train so hard and you push so much that your body gives. And your body says, hey, you got to slow down for a little while. Like,
mm-hmm.
you're gonna really break me if I don't slow you down.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, coming off the Olympic trials, you know, I mean, obviously I was at the high point of my running. Everything was flowing right.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to workouts, you know, I'd wake up late accidentally. I'd show up to the workout and I'd knock it out of the park, you know, best sessions ever, you know, and then I'd sit down at the side of Stony Creek High School track and I'd basically be in tears saying, I don't know why I'm running this well. Like, how is this happening? You know, and I was just kind of gracious for, like, the body was allowing it. Everything was just allowing it. And then, so that was the next spring, and I started doing some track races. And usually whenever I run on the track, I put on spikes. Don't like to cooperate with my Achilles tendon. I don't know why. I still don't have an exact answer. So the Achilles kind of started giving out partway through that spring, but you know, I'd had all these great workouts. I was still in great shape.
Mm-hmm.
So pushing it, and when you push it through an injury, if it doesn't break that piece of the body, sometimes something else will break.
Right.
So for me, that was my back going out because my, you know, I was putting more pressure on one leg than the other. And so I had to call out of the world championships. The best thing about that was that I knew that the next guy in line for the world championships
mm-hmm.
was me. So, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was go and take this awesome trip overseas, which I'd never, ever done and still haven't. It's still the one goal that kind of eludes me and probably why I'm still training.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they'll give away two spots and maybe I'll take one of them. So, you know, I mean, it was hard, definitely, you know. I had a whole great vacation planned after the race, you know, to go to Helsinki. And pretty much 3 weeks before the race, I had to say, look, you know, somebody else has a better shot. And, you know, looking back, I look and I say, well, geez, I was so fit coming off of 212 shape. I mean, you can do a lot
mm-hmm.
For that. I mean, I probably could have ran pretty decent injured.
Yeah.
But I was limping through every run. So it was really tough. You know, it was kind of start of some unraveling, I guess. And so I had to take a bunch of downtime. And, you know, I had to watch the Olympic marathon the previous year on TV. And then I watched my three teammates run on you know, a webcast
mm-hmm.
In the championships, which was Clint and Brian and Chad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was a lot of watching where I almost could have been, you know?
Yeah, that must have been tough.
So, you know, yeah, it was like, oh, I could be experiencing this. That would be cool. That's like the highest thing in the sport you can do is go around all of these superstars of our sport.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that would have been cool, but, you know, life has its path, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then I just kind of went through a year or two there where I was battling my Achilles. I'd start to get in shape, and then the Achilles would flare up. And so we just kind of got to a frustration point where Kevin and Keith and I decided, you know, okay, let's get the Olympic trials qualifying time in 2007 in Boston so that I could run in the 2008 trials.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that would get me back to, because I couldn't train at the same level as I was when I was running 212. So I had to do something, I figured, because I could either train so-so, you know, half-assed, as they say,
mm-hmm.
And run 220 for a number of years, or I could take a risk, get the surgery, and hopefully fix my Achilles to the point where I could train full bore again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just couldn't do that, you know. So I ran, you know, 219 and qualified for the 2008 trials in 07. And, you know, pretty much it had been a rough couple of years. You know, you go from being on top of the sport to not really showing this this potential again,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so, you know, I guess it was hard for myself mentally. It was probably also hard for my coaches. I mean, they weren't trying any less hard.
Right.
You know, and. You know, so some rough goes in there, to say the least.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I can imagine. Just kind of going back to the Achilles and your, I guess your thoughts now about the surgery, because I know a lot of athletes kind of have that that situation where they have a serious injury and it's like they either need to take care of it or kind of train mediocre, and you kind of went the training route. Do you wish you would have gotten it taken care of it sooner? And you know, maybe. Started off, you know, being able to train healthy earlier on in the process, or are you pretty comfortable with the way you approached it?
I wish I probably would have gotten it done 1 year sooner, so
yeah.
I could have given myself a better chance at the 08 trials.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I waited the right amount of time. You know, surgery is never an easy thing to do.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm not saying. I mean, hindsight's always easy, but. I'm just, like I said, I work with a lot of athletes who have that decision to make, whether, you know, maybe it's not necessarily surgery, but it's something's, you know, a lot of times it's Achilles stuff, you know, and a bad Achilles problem. It's like, you know, look, we need to take 4 or 5 weeks here and really do nothing but cross training and getting this better. And in the long run, that's going to make you better, as opposed to training for a week and then having to take a week off, training for a week, you know. And so I'm glad, or at least I'm glad you shared your experience of kind of what you did and kind of how you would approach it.
And, you know, I ended up, you know, I could run full bore after it.
Mm-hmm.
It took a while. I didn't do as much cross training as I should have done coming off the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say it took me 2 years to get back to full speed after that surgery in 2007. So, you know, to where I could really throw down on my right leg and push hard and not have, you know, weakness or not have pain, you know.
Right.
But it fully came back and, you know, I mean, pretty much I wasn't successful at the 08 trials. I almost gave up and decided not to run anymore. I watched the movie Spirit of the Marathon, you know, and I was kind of gaining weight and getting out of shape and taking some time away from the sport a little bit, just backing off. I watched that movie and I was like, I can still run at the front of a marathon. And as you know, it's really exciting to have a motorcycle beside you and,
right,
you know, or just to be out there giving it your best, you know, if you relate it to somebody running, trying to break 4 hours or trying to break 3 hours. Like, there's nothing like that feeling of giving it a go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I walked out of that movie and I just said, hey, we got to give this another go.
Yeah.
So, I was done with the team because we'd struggled for 3 years on both sides. We were kind of like, okay, let's get a change going.
Mm-hmm.
And so I moved down to, I wanted to move back out west, mountains, which is where I had grown up.
Right.
I love running on the mountains. Moved back out to join the Millen Elite. And, you know, it was good. Greg challenged me a lot. He said, you know, if you're going to come here, you need to be like an athlete who has his head on fire and you're trying to find water. Said you're not going to come back from this and be great unless you're really, really motivated. And Greg was great for me. I mean, he really challenged me to be an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things I had learned in college again and the things I learned with some of the better at drills, do better at speed work. Like, let's get rounded. You know? Let's make sure your core is strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent, you know, it brought the athlete back in me.
Right.
And run about 216, which, you know, it's not 212, but it's in the same realm.
Mm-hmm.
And it brought back a lot of my confidence, and I'm happy that I came back from surgery, didn't quit, and got another good couple races out of me that said, hey, my body's 100% still. Yeah, I had the surgery, and sometimes people think, oh, you get surgery and you're never the same. Luckily, my doctor did well enough that I feel like I was the same.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. So how did their training, now you're living in Boulder. And so how has your training changed over the years, you know, kind of coming out of the Hansen's role where you were running a ton of mileage and obviously putting in a lot of doubles, sometimes even triples. How did that train change going into working with Greg McMillan and Flagstaff and then now where you are in Boulder?
Kind of just the coaching changes and how my training would change.
Yeah, or just even your approach to the training, you know, in terms of whether it be in the actual training change or how you approached, you know, the training. Did something change where you said, well, I don't need to run 140 miles a week anymore? Are you still doing that type of training?
Got it. So do you mind if I just say one more thing about the Achilles?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Please do.
Just for people that might question the Achilles, like, I've had a lot of success with, you can't just sit on your butt with it. Because for me, like, I'll take 5 weeks off and nothing will, and it'll be the same.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to stay mobilized. And I've had a lot of success with using heat packs.
Okay.
You know, people say ice your Achilles. You got to find out, are you an icer or are you a heater?
Yeah.
Both of those can work good depending on the person.
Yeah. I like the contrast bath to go back and forth. I stick my foot in a hot bucket of or hot water and then cold water. That's my favorite remedy.
Yeah, and those things were good. And then just recently, when I first moved out here in Boulder, It worked really well for me to, I got some dry needling.
Okay.
And I was really scared. It's like, you know, for me, putting it in my Achilles, which is my soft spot, is like putting it in my spine. It's really but I got relief instantly.
Really?
So, you know, and it was probably a different Achilles level of injury at that point. But, you know, and I was racing the next weekend in cross-country spikes.
Wow.
So, you know, there's definitely some things out there. And, you know, anybody can check my website or contact me.
What's your website, Trent?
TrentBriney.com.
All right. We'll spell it out for the, let me spell it out for the transcribers here. It's Trent, TrentBriney.com. I spelled that right, right?
I think so, yeah.
All right, cool. So that's for the transcribers there.
Yeah. Sorry, I just wanted to add that. I think that's something that I've had a lot of experience with Achilles, bilateral now.
Right.
You know, it's shown up on my other leg, which is probably shorter since the surgery I had on the other leg.
Mm-hmm.
So. No shakes, but I had a gastroc slide surgery.
Okay.
A calcaneus shave.
Yep.
And they took out the bursa sacs on my one Achilles. And it was done by a doctor in Detroit. And I was really happy. He worked with some of the NBA Pistons, and that made me feel safe.
So, oh, good.
So back to your other question, which was training was different between kind of the different coaching things and how my view of it was.
Right.
You know, I think after kind of the downturn there at Hanson's, you know, I was just looking to reconnect. I wanted to get back in the fight, but I didn't want to be in the same fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd beat my head against that wall at Hanson's for a while, and I needed some newness to the training. And so like I had said, Greg was just great. I mean, you know, he allowed me to start into it, being out of shape, and just... The team down there was very, very supportive, and they're like, "No, man, you're a champion. You can get this back," you know, and you know, so, you know, and piece by piece, I just started getting back into athletic shape, and you know, we'd do drills a couple times a week, and
mm-hmm.
You know, and at this point in my career, I was, you know, 28 or 30, and you know, had bills to pay, so I had to work,
mm-hmm.
you know. At Hanson's, you know, I'd work anywhere from 20 to 40 hours a week and one or two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And once I got to McMillan, you know, I couldn't stand to do the same 140-mile weeks, but I'd get up to 110 to 130.
Okay.
Like my sweet spot, you know, where I feel good, everything works, like it challenges me, but it doesn't fry me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you still have to go to work and show up.
Right.
So, you know, I worked at a retail establishment down there, and that was fine. I was on my feet, and, you know, so I'd be tired sometimes, so I'd have to skip a second run, but, you know, I was still doing what I loved,
mm-hmm.
which was running and getting back after it. And, you know, I was getting my athleticism back even though I was skipping second runs because I had so many years of training behind me.
Right.
And I was doing the drills no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
As those are something that I feel like was really adding to, you know, I needed my range of motion back in my Achilles,
mm-hmm.
if I was ever going to be elite level again, you know, and so I was really focused on that, like, what components did I need to get back to that level?
Mm-hmm.
So we worked on speed. I did some awesome speed workouts with, you know, guys that are pretty good, Brett Gotcher and
right.
and Fagan and Andrew Limoncello. I mean, I remember doing a 4x1 mile workout faster than I'd ever done mm-hmm. after I went out to McMillan. And it was kind of like, wow, I can come back from surgery. I can make a change. I can get out of shape. I can get back into it just by applying myself. And,
right.
and you know, at that point I felt by becoming an athlete and trusting in the science of the sport
mm-hmm.
and the consistency of training. So, you know, and then, I was there for a couple of years and, I think it's just hard to give yourself fully to a job
mm-hmm.
and to running. And, you know, eventually, I mean, when you've done it for 8 or 10 years, it's hard to keep pushing at that same level.
Right.
I don't really know why we finished or why we ended. I think Greg and I had talked about it. And, you know, Greg felt like he had given me everything he could possibly give.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he'd done everything he could and I was just missing a little piece, and that piece was for me to make the connection, you know. And, you know, when I look back on it, it's probably that mental piece. Like, I really needed to get in a battle again, mentally, to say, because I was scared.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't think I was there anymore, you know, but I was running workouts with those four guys and with Abdi Rahman, you know, and I was running long runs, and, you know, they'd push the pace, and then I'd take my turn and push the pace. And, you know, those are good signs that you're fit.
Yeah.
But I wasn't connecting it to my racing. So I don't know if I just needed another year under Greg's program to show fully that I was all the way back. But, I mean, the workouts were showing me. So I don't know, you know, I kind of feel like maybe another 6 months or a year and I might have popped one.
Yeah.
I ran 2:16:30 right at the end of being coached by Greg.
Okay.
I had worked with his assistant coach, Trina Painter, down there. And she was great for me mentally, just focusing and individually working with me. So, you know, I felt like I was all the way back.
Yeah.
You know, then not being part of the program, I kind of lost some of my own consistency and I wasn't training quite as much.
Okay.
You know, it helps when you can show up to practice every day.
Right.
So, and I still trained with those guys after I left the team and after we made that change. And they still were crazy supportive all the time. And it was really, it was a dynamic. You know, Hansen's was super competitive and almost a little cutthroat, you know, and sometimes supportive, you know.
Right.
To McMillan, at first there were no other marathoners. There was one other guy, Andrew Middleton, and he was my training partner. And cheered for each other, and then the 10K guys, Brett and Jordan, they didn't care. So they were like, go for it, dude. Kick some butt. So it was really what I needed. You know, it was awesome, and I was back out west, loving the trails, loving the surroundings, the national parks, and that.
Yeah, it goes back to what you said earlier in the interview about, you know, to run well, you need to be happy. And it sounds like, you know, you needed to let go of the baggage of everything that happened, you know, in 2005, 2006, and, you know, reconnect with yourself, you know, be in a beautiful spot, kind of, you know, make yourself happy again.
Yeah, well said.
And so then you, now you're in Boulder, and you're still training at the same level. What's your training look like now?
I'm not quite training at the same level. You know, I'm listening to my body a lot more. After 15 years of pushing it, 10 or 15, you know, the body sometimes is a little more grumpy. You know, I'm respecting my body and, but also still using the same principles I've learned over time. Of you can't just be a one directional athlete. You have to have speed. You have to also have endurance. So, you know, and for me, I've lost some of my speed. And I know I really need that to stay at the elite level or stay close to elite. So, you know, right now I'm going to go into a speed segment and then do a marathon.
Okay.
I'll just do a shorter marathon build up because I have 10 years or 12 years of strength behind me.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I guess that's my training now. You know, I work at Boulder Running Company out here. I have some people that I run with. And we have, you know, a nice community here where I can jump in with Brad Hudson's group.
Yep.
Welcoming to me showing up and running with his guys and gals. And, you know, so it's kind of a Tuesday, Friday, Sunday sort of thing.
Okay.
With workouts. And then the other runs are just filler runs. I'm just trying to make sure my quality days are quality. And my other days, you know, I'm getting in some work.
Yeah.
You know, if I only run 45 minutes to 75 minutes, that's okay for right now.
Yeah.
Give myself the opportunity to still be competitive. Start getting really excited. I'll start pushing it for a month or two into a buildup. But, you know, just trying to stay healthy and stay in the sport and keep enjoying it.
Yeah. No, and I think, you know, it's an interesting approach that I've heard before. And I think this happens with a lot of runners as they get older. You know, you can start capitalizing off those years and years of training. And when you're starting out, everybody always tells you, you know, you're on the beginning side of things. So you're like, oh no, this, you know, all the training you put in this year is going to benefit you. and now you're seeing those benefits where you don't have to run crazy mileage anymore. You can give your body some recovery, and you can use that strength and use that endurance that you built up over the years. And I think it's a good lesson for, you know, older runners who are kind of approaching masters or 50 years old, who have been running for a long time, who can, you know, if they're struggling, probably one of the things that they can do is start backing off some of the mileage, because it's there. You know, that aerobic strength is there. And so it's time to capitalize on it, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So now I want to talk a little bit about kind of who you're, you know, what you've got two things on there. I see Marathon Guide and Power Bar Elite.
Yep. So, you know, thankfully, since I moved on from Flagstaff, basically, you know, I was supported by Adidas and, you know, Team USA Arizona down there.
Mm-hmm.
And after leaving there, you know, I was kind of, you know, looking around, and I had some friends that were connected to MarathonGuide.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, so,
and sorry, for our audience who doesn't know, what is Marathon Guide?
MarathonGuide.com is a website, and they have news stories on marathons around the world. They have a online calendar for marathons all over the world, U.S. and various other places. They have links to results. And then another thing that they do that's really key is they do, like, race registration, online registration, results, those sorts of things. You know, it's kind of it's a competitor to the big active.com.
Okay.
You know, they run, like, registration for Twin Cities Marathon right now, Houston Marathon. So, you know, John Elliott, he's a New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
He is relocating maybe, or he has a second home here in Boulder.
Okay.
But, you know, it's just this guy who loves running, and he's in his 40s and used to be in New York and had some other job that, you know, he just said, you know what, I've been doing this Marathon Guide thing on the side, and
mm-hmm.
I do it full time, and he loves it, and he travels to races, and, you know, he supports runners, and
yeah.
Both American and some non-American runners, and, you know, he's just here to encourage people to run. And
yeah. And, it's always great when you can have companies and websites and, you know, things like that are supportive in the running community, as opposed to just being this big behemoth that, you know, are kind of there. And, you know, to be able to give back to the sport and to do it for the love of sport is pretty cool. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm amazed that I connected to him. Like, he's just, like, he's genuine and he's helpful. And
yeah.
He means it, and he likes being helpful, and it's wonderful, you know. You know, and then I also... with Power Bar Team Elite.
Yep.
With them now for 2 years. So they helped supply me with stuff to recover from my workout.
All right.
Recovery drink. And then, you know, in the morning, if I get up and I'm a little hungry before my workout, you know, I'll have like a Power Bar Priya Bar is my favorite.
Okay.
I don't know. They're like 80 calories and it doesn't disturb my body and it gives me something so I don't feel empty when I go push it.
Right.
So, both of those have been good, and, you know, it's fun going out with Power Bar and working, like, expos
mm-hmm.
For various different events, and just meeting some other athletes. I mean, there's some pretty cool triathletes and
yeah, I bet.
Here in the area. So, both of those people have been great, and then just, you know, there's so many people in life that aren't necessarily sponsors, but
right.
They might as well be, just because they've thrown their support your way,
mm-hmm.
you know, from races that have helped you out. To, you know, stuff like that. So I still have a great connection down in Birmingham, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Mercedes-Benz Marathon. I'm building a connection here with the Colfax Marathon, which I was lucky enough to win a couple of weeks ago.
Right, congrats.
You know, it's fun to win a local marathon. And, you know, I'm also doing some coaching with Bold Running here in town.
Okay.
Which is, it's the official training program for Boulder Boulder.
Okay.
And also official training program for Boulder Running Company.
Okay.
So I coach 1 day a week or 2 days a week with them, and it gives me a connection to athletes of all abilities, you know, and it's the same fight, same battle,
mm-hmm.
you know, with these guys, you know, it's like challenging their mind a little bit. And over the last couple of weeks, it's been fun to engage with a couple of people, and they're like, oh, I can do that with my mind, you
right.
know, and, you know, it's fun to share that, you know, and I think that camaraderie of the sport is probably why I won't be able to quit the sport.
Yeah.
Because it just feels awesome, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No matter where you move, where you are in the world, you have friends. Like,
yeah.
Right away. So we're lucky in that respect.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's awesome. Well, Trent, I appreciate you, you know, sharing your story. Just a lot of amazing information you shared, and I appreciate you opening up about kind of everything that you went through, both positive and negative. I know my audience is really gonna appreciate this. So thank you.
Thank you.